Hello and welcome to Generation War. My name is Andrew Pugliese. This week we're talking about athletes and social media. Now, social media is a sexy term these days. It's being studied by academia for its impact on the world's youth during its formative years, how it is changing news coverage, such as presidential elections and the Arab Springs, and even how people form and maintain relationships. Another area worth exploring is its impact on sports and how the social media activity of athletes has changed how fans perceive them. I'm joined today by three men who work in the industry tasked with covering these athletes. Mark McGuire is executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady, New York. He has 37 years in the business under his belt, including nearly 8 years as a sports editor and columnist. Tyler Dunn is an NFL features writer at Bleacher Report. Dunn has 7 years to his credit, including stints covering the Buffalo Bills, Green Bay Packers, and the NFL as a whole. Dr. Brian Moritz is an assistant professor at SUNY Oswego, teaching digital media production and online journalism. Moritz spent 10 years in sports journalism. All right, so I guess we can start pretty simple because I want to kind of get your perspective, the three of you, about how you perceive athletes and how that's kind of impacting the job that you do. Because obviously this is a question you guys probably hear a lot, but how has the growth of social media changed the way you report a story? And I guess I'll start with Mark, since I got you on the call first this morning. Mark, how has social media changed the way you report a story?
Well, it's given us a lot more avenues to report stories in terms of both how we report and where we get information. Certainly the news cycle has changed over the years to now it's instantaneous. In terms of whether we report live events or how we promote stories and certainly how we gather information directly from the subjects we write about, because certainly now athletes, coaches, and others create news in what they put out on social media.
And going around, how about you, Tyler? How has this kind of impacted you? Because obviously the athletes you cover aren't always necessarily right in your market.
Right. Well, I guess when I was covering the Packers and then the Bills, there was a little bit more of that day-to-day grind of news. So you have to follow every single player, coach, agent, whoever's involved with your beat, because a player could just start following a new team on Twitter and that leads you to, oh, that player just got signed by that team. I mean, you kind of see it now even with the NBA trade deadline. So I mean, I think it was a little more manic when you're on that beat. We're now kind of, as an NFL features writer, it's not quite as manic, but yeah, you know, you're keeping an eye on everything, trying to have a whole cross section of the league, some players, some agents, some scouts, and you never know what little nugget you're going to pick up on. I mean, you can throw Snapchat right in there too. I mean, I follow a lot of players on Snapchat, and you know, you might see them somewhere or doing something. I'd say 99% of players' Snapchats are actually pretty dumb, you know, or pretty innocent and benign. They might just be snapping themselves, singing a rap song in their car and that kind of stuff. But there have been times where you see a player doing or saying something on there that becomes newsworthy. I mean, there was a player for Baylor, that wide receiver, his name escapes me. Somebody caught him on Snapchat, like, ruthlessly beating his dog, and the dude ended up getting suspended 3 games, and he wasn't invited to the combine next week. Who knows if his NFL career even takes off because of this horrific thing. So, yeah, it's completely changed the game. I mean, you've got to be plugged into everything.
Absolutely. And, Brian, I know that your career kind of turned to academia towards the start of social media, but how did social media kind of play into when you were reporting? And I guess also, how has it helped you continue your reporting career as you continue to do podcasts and write on your own?
It really was. I mean, when I left the business, it was 2009, and that was really at the infancy of social media as being a big thing. Like, there were a lot of early adopters to it, but it wasn't near the level of today, where almost every player is on social media and every team is on social media, and it's become such an important part of the day-to-day job, like Tyler was saying. In terms of my own reporting and my own writing, I mean, obviously it's invaluable for any reporter or journalist or even professor, academic, to be able to kind of promote your own work. You know, if you have something that you write, if you have a podcast you're on, such as this,
you can promote a link, and that not only that can not only help your own career, that can raise the level of your institution that you're at, your school, your newspaper. Suddenly that becomes more visible. People start noticing the name of that, and I think that that can be very valuable as well. And it's just been fascinating for me to see kind of how players use social media, how players, I think the big fear is that the big fear early on was that social media was going to do away with the need for reporters, right? We heard a lot about this. Nobody's going to need to read this. Nobody needs a journalist anymore because the players are just going to talk right to the fans. And that's certainly happening, but I don't feel like that great impact has been there that it's been feared. I mean, I think a lot of players seem to use it much more as kind of like a personal marketing ploy, or ploy is the wrong word, a personal marketing device rather than a big platform or anything else. And certainly there are players who use it as a platform, but it's been interesting to see. I don't know if it's been this huge paradigm shift that we were expecting.
And what's interesting to follow up on what Brian just said is there are still athletes out there that really don't understand that the platform they have is broadcast to a wider audience than they intend. And I've spoken to many college coaches, and I've written about this, where they've just stopped recruiting athletes simply because of what they posted on social media. And we've had many examples of athletes and people in the sports world who've gotten in trouble for what they've posted on social media. And it wasn't necessarily they were looking to cause trouble. I don't think they were necessarily thinking about the wide audience they have. Fernando Bryant, the former Jags defensive back, was fired from his job as a coach at a Christian school for something he posted on social media, and he's not really sure why. The best he could think of was something he may have had a post of him holding alcohol. So I think we've also seen this side effect of not only athletes using it to promote themselves, but also sometimes using social media and not really taking into account the impact their posts have.
Right. You know, that's the thing with social media is, you know, we all know this from using it ourselves. It can feel really ephemeral. It can feel really, oh, I'm just going to post this tweet. It's just a tweet. Who cares? And, you know, certainly when you're a pro athlete or an elite college athlete, you have a lot of eyeballs on you. You have a lot of people who follow you. And all of a sudden, what becomes, you know, a quick picture or something you put on Snapchat or on Instagram or even on Twitter, now all of a sudden, you know, 500,000 people are seeing and sharing and retweeting, and all of a sudden it becomes a thing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, there was, gosh, I mean, you can, was it Draymond Green recently who sent a little dick pic to somebody and he sent it to all of his followers on Snapchat too? Like, this stuff is going to keep happening. You guys are going to keep getting them in trouble. And even teams, and I know scouts across various leagues who, you know, they'll pose as women on Twitter and Snapchat, whatever, and almost like, you know, hit on players and try to get into their world that way and see what kind of people they really are. You know, it's there's really, you know, no limits, no ends to where all this could lead and getting guys in trouble, really.
Well, we did find out how many athletes think the world is flat, so we have that going for us.
Now, kind of like getting into what you guys are talking about with, you know, how they can use the social media platforms they have and, you know, how it's interpreted. And I kind of mentioned this before we hit record on this, but do you feel like an athlete should see his on-field legacy impacted by the comments off the field? Because like I mentioned, you're seeing a guy like Curt Schilling who, you know, the bloody sock, the World Series with Arizona where he's the co-World Series MVP. He has this great legacy now, and I'm sure there's other athletes that I'm not thinking of, but he's seeing his Hall of Fame voting going down in terms of numbers of votes simply because of what he feels like he can put on social media. Do you feel like an on-field legacy should be impacted by this kind of stuff?
Well, Schilling's an interesting case, and I think interesting is a word putting it mildly, because it's not, you know, two things with him. One, it's not just what he's posting on social media. I mean, he's posting some really horrific stuff. I mean, even taking the liberal conservative political bias out of it, he shared some stuff that's really, really nasty. I believe he shared one of the pictures of like hanging a journalist or something like that. And just really objectively bad stuff. And coupled with that, Schilling's kind of a borderline Hall of Fame guy anyway, from most people you talk to. He's not the slam dunk. He's not a Ken Griffey Jr. type automatic guy. And so it's kind of two things working against him on that. But, you know, should it influence? Probably not. But does it influence? Absolutely.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point. It's for those borderline cases. It's for the college coaches recruiting two kids, and they're both of equal value. And it may come down to a character issue. And it may come down to, okay, one kid has clean social media and one kid has, you know, stuff on social media that's highly objectionable. They're going to pick that first kid. So it may not be the first thing you look at, but it could be a factor in multiple things. And with Schilling, the Hall of Fame, there's a character clause. So there is something in there that you can point to where that actually is a tangible reason to keep him out. And he is a borderline case.
No, I mean, just to echo what they said, like, I mean, Brian put it well where, you know, it should it impact things. And I'm just thinking from the football point of things, I don't really know the bylaws as far as the Baseball Hall of Fame and how that goes. But, you know, should a social media post really affect what the guy did on the field? I mean, probably not, but it probably does. I mean, voters are human beings. I mean, we're not robots just, you know, looking at statistics. I think that it probably does affect one way or another whatever a guy does on social media. I mean, really, and just beyond that, like, this past group in the NFL Hall of Fame or the Pro Football Hall of Fame with Terrell Davis, Kurt Warner, and LaDainian Tomlinson was a slam dunk, but they all got in. And I got to think that Warner and Davis just being on TV every day and people just seeing them all the time, maybe that did affect, you know, what people thought about them as people. Maybe it affected them what they thought about their careers and that they were actually a tick better than they actually were. So whatever a player does in the limelight, and that includes TV, Twitter, whatever, it's going to affect how people think.
And it's not just, you know, a social media issue, too. I mean, look what happened with T.O. in the Hall of Fame vote. I mean, he... You know, not through strict on-field performance. You know, if you look at statistically, there's a great argument that Terrell Owens should be in the Hall of Fame. And he wasn't an active on social media guy, but his kind of off-field locker room, non-playing antics costing him a lot of votes, keeping him out of the Hall of Fame for 2 years now. So, you know, I think with a lot of these issues, they're not specific to social media, but I feel like social media tends to amplify a lot of these issues or give them a new urgency or kind of a new weight that maybe they wasn't there before.
And that goes to the age old question, you know, you look at certain athletes from days gone by and how they would have survived in an era of social media, you know, the Mickey Mantles of the world, the Babe Ruths, et cetera, where they, you know, it would have been fun, to say the least, but they certainly would not have the burnished images they do today.
Now, one other thing that the way that social media is playing on the current players is that you're kind of seeing them, and you guys kind of touched on this when you were talking about their social media presence, is that a lot of them just kind of use it as their personal marketing platform or just kind of as a way for themselves to just express themselves. And in the last 12 months especially, it seems like we're seeing more and more athletes kind of getting into the spotlight, not necessarily for their play on the field all the time, but also for how they kind of express themselves and their views. You know, most recently we're seeing Dexter Fowler of the Cardinals you know, kind of getting thrown in there because his wife is Iranian and he's making comments about the travel ban. But I mean, obviously kneeling during the national anthem, questions about whether or not athletes from college basketball to professional baseball and what have you, questioning whether they want to go to the White House to visit after a championship now. Is this a natural progression of how our society is going as a whole, that everyone's just going to kind of, no matter if you're an athlete or a chiropractor, you want to talk about the world as a whole? Or is this new to have athletes kind of stand up and do something like this because of social media, I guess, because they are more comfortable because of what they put out there already?
I think the generation as a whole is more comfortable in expressing viewpoints and sharing, period. And now they have an avenue to do so unfiltered. So, and being able to not have to go through media is something that's very appealing to athletes. I mean, that's why you see, you know, the Players Tribune often being the conduit for, you know, retirement announcements, for example. But I think it's also the, you know, it's a generation now that, you know, does not believe in the unexpressed thought. So it's, I think it's, I think they're very comfortable with that.
And I agree with what Mark said, and I don't necessarily, you know, and Mark wasn't putting a value judgment. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think one of the advantages that social media has given just sports, you know, life in general, but sports in general, is that it puts, if people are more comfortable putting their own feelings out into the marketplace, then I think that that's a good thing. We get a more diverse view. A New England player doesn't have to wait for a reporter to call and say, hey, are you going to the White House to visit President Trump, to say no, and here's why, and give a specific platform or reason why, or wait until after it happens or whatever. They can do it before. They can do it in a way in which they're comfortable doing it. And I think that, you know, sports journalism's always had a bit of a diversity problem, you know, in terms of the workforce, in terms of historically the people we talk to, the players we talk to, kind of the points of view that we express. And in general, I'm for anything. I think it's good that anything that gives more diverse ideas voices and gets more diverse voices into in front of people, I think is a good thing.
And actually, that's a really good point. It's also an age factor, too.
Absolutely.
Giving a different generational viewpoint. I mean, if you want to really go back generations, you know, think about what Jim Bouton would have done with Twitter.
Oh.
He had to wait to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have had to. He would have been able to express those thoughts he had about the clubhouse instantaneously. And he's considered, you know, you could actually consider him, you know, the grandfather of social media in terms of exposing what was happening behind the curtain. But he had to do it in a book form. Now it happens instantaneously.
I mean, yeah, look at Chris Long for the Patriots. I don't know if you guys caught it. I think you did, Brian, where he basically was tweeting what people were saying about him not wanting to go to the White House, and had like a quick, witty response to each thought, tweet by tweet by tweet. I mean, he said, there was, quote, you hate white people, end quote. You realize all humans that live in America should be concerned. Also, that assumption says something about you. I mean, he did this, I want to say, like 12 to 15 times in a row. So you're right. That's all kind of stuff that somebody might have done in a book at one point. Here's Chris Long, like, defending himself and his decision not to go to the White House, like, in real time, tweet by tweet. I think each one almost had, like, 1,000 retweets. It was pretty wild. Yeah, one thing I'll ask, though, is, like, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, here's Tom Brady, maybe the greatest player ever to play the game, and it's pretty clear he's friends with President Trump and has totally different viewpoints. You don't hear a peep out of him politically. You don't hear anything at all. And maybe that is out of fear that in this realm he would just, he'd be reprimanded. He'd be an enemy of the state. He doesn't want to say anything he really believes politically at all. I kind of wish there was more of that back and forth. Sometimes you don't really see both viewpoints in the Twitter sphere kind of going back and forth. I don't know. That'd be kind of interesting to see Chris Long and Tom Brady just, you know, having a political debate on Twitter.
Right. It's amazing. Like a guy like Richie Incognito, Tyler, who you've written about a lot, who I know is a very big Trump supporter, getting involved with someone. But Brady's so interesting because, you know, he's not politically vocal, despite having a hat in locker for some reason. But then on Facebook, he's really, really funny, and I hate saying that, but he's really funny. Like, the other day, he had a post of, like, a little crazy wall trying to find his jersey from the Super Bowl, and, you know, that's, like, I can't like Tom Brady, but that can almost make me not hate him as much. And so it's really interesting to see how athletes or whoever helps them put together their pages kind of can change the public, they can help kind of create their own narrative about their story.
Totally. I mean, yeah, totally. Tom Brady's going to get a lot more fans that way than, you know, hashtagging Make America Great and maybe saying how he feels about that kind of stuff. So you're right. I mean, you can craft your image, your narrative, and how people view you nationally, yourself.
And there's certainly a business acumen behind Tom Brady. There's a business acumen behind Derek Jeter. You know,
absolutely.
Jimmy Derek Jeter's best quote ever. What? there wasn't one. There was a certain blandness to it that was calculated. That was discouraging to us, the sports writers. But something, we're not the audience, and it served him well.
Absolutely. And now, kind of finishing up with the fan-athlete relationship again. Social media is kind of allowing fans to break down this barrier between themselves and their heroes. And you guys have already kind of touched on this with athletes replying to tweets and, you know, putting themselves out there, you know, keeping their pages public for fans to see. Even in an odd sense, I don't know how many of you follow tennis, but recently Canadian tennis player Eugenie Bouchard ended up going on a date with a fan because she lost a bet with him over social media on the Super Bowl, which is obviously more of an extreme case, but fans will from time to time have that interaction. Is this something you see happening more often, or just something for publicists to crack down on and keep it more to the short conversations around an autograph? Like, how is this something that could get bigger in terms of fan and athlete relations, or do PR departments kind of have to start reining them in?
I think it will just only get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're talking for good or for worse. I mean, you had at the other end of the spectrum, you had Sammy Watkins a couple of years ago on Instagram telling all fans to go back to their little jobs and just blasting people. You're going to get a lot of players in a wave of emotion just ripping fans too, whether it's a reply or a public post or whatever. So, I mean, these PR departments, they can't rein these guys in. I mean, they can try. They can try to have these big meetings like they do every year and thump into their head how evil reporters are and how evil social media is, and you should just shut your mouth and don't say anything because that's what Bill Belichick's Patriots do, and look at all their championships. They're human beings. They're in their mid to late 20s. They have opinions. They're going to want to interact. I mean, guys get more upset about a fan in his mother's basement tweet than in an article sometimes or anything else. I mean, it ticks them off. So they're going to naturally respond. And for the other spectrum, yeah, they'll respond positively too. They understand that this is their life, this is their image, and if they can connect with fans on a certain level on Twitter, whether it's a contest or meeting somebody in real life, that's going to happen too. So, I don't think that there's any way you can rein these guys in.
You know, as Mark was saying with Jeter, there's a certain business acumen to it. There's a certain, brand building aspect to it that I think athletes look at social media as being able to do, and through the interactions with fans, being able to kind of do that, to kind of engender some goodwill. I mean, Otto Cinco did that when he would tweet out, "I'm in Miami at this restaurant. First five fans, come have lunch with me," or something like that, or it's like random stuff like that. And it kind of helped give him a better reputation in light of some on and off field stuff that he had. I do worry, I see it increasing, although I feel like the current crop of players is a little more social media savvy than the first generation, just because they've grown up with it. They've been around it their whole kind of computing lives, their whole adult lives. But I do often fear that there's a huge level of fan entitlement now, that if I can tweet at a player, he better respond to me, or she better respond to me. And that's especially dangerous when you get into women's sports. Like the date with the player, that's a really cute story. I'm glad it had a happy ending. But, man, you don't have to think too hard or too long to see how that could go really, really bad really, really quickly, and have a Monica Seles situation or worse. So I do worry, Twitter has, huge, huge problems with dealing with harassment, especially of females on the site. And I just worry about that could be an unintended side effect of this great connection that we have with between fans and players, is that kind of entitlement aspect.
Well, that's a really good point in terms of bringing out what females have to deal with, which is an entirely different animal. There is, in dealing with social media and dealing with the internet as a whole, there's a facade of intimacy that's involved, where you do feel a closeness. But at the same time, there's an anonymity that allows people to do some really horrific things. And athletes and journalists and regular folk are subject to some really horrific things on it. So it's certainly a double-edged sword. On one hand, athletes are able to have this connection with fans, but at arm's length. At other times, that connection can still be too close, especially when there's a concerted effort to harass. So it certainly can work in a positive and a highly negative.
And I guess one last thing I just thought about for, you know, athletes that are a little more vulnerable, and all of you have covered high school or collegiate sports. How is the social media activity of this generation growing up with it now, even down to varsity and JV sports up through college? How is that kind of having an impact on how you cover them? And just even fans of collegiate teams, how can these kids curb these negative trends and that may arise as they grow up and they're no longer viewed as just kids? Because, you know, obviously varsity athletes, it's their friends and their family that are seeing it mostly, but as they get into college or even like, you know, Mark with a Siena or UAlbany, Tyler and Brian with SU, I mean, these are programs that are followed by very heavily by the locals that want to know what these kids are doing. So how do they kind of curb that negative trend? Because they are still just kids, but they're playing on a bigger stage.
Well, going back to what I said earlier, there are kids who, and I've talked to Will Brown at UAlbany and other coaches, they have dropped kids from the recruiting ranks simply because of what they post on social media. And it's sort of a sliding scale. I mean, if you're in college and, you know, you're appearing in the paper every day and you're posting something that's truly outlandish, it's a story. If you're, the high school basketball star, and you're in the paper, you know, every Wednesday and Saturday after Tuesday and Friday basketball, there's a chance you will end up in the paper regardless, because it, especially if you're being recruited by a D1 program, it has come to a point now where news is created over posts to social media by well-known figures in sports. In entertainment, in politics, this is a source of news, and even the youngest athletes have to be made to recognize that. Trust me, when my daughter was on the recruiting trail in high school, I constantly had to remind her, "No, you cannot tweet that. No, you know more people than just your friends are reading this," and sometimes it takes a while for that message to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just nailed it. I think this is something like that a lot of, just in general, I think kids are introduced to social media at such a young age. I mean, 12, 13, 14 years old, it should be taught and understood, like, whatever you put out there and whatever your profession is going to be seen by everybody. I mean, it's public. It's for public consumption. So I think that by the time a player does get to the college level or amateur level, that they probably have an understanding of the magnitude of their words and it can get them in trouble and it can go both ways. But at that point, when you're 20, 21 years old in 2017, I would hope that most athletes kind of know everything they say can be seen by everybody. We know that's not the case, but more and more as we kind of get going year by year, I think that understanding will really grow just because kids are introduced to all social media at such a young age.
And it becomes, it's such a part of their day-to-day life from the time they're 13, 14 on. And that, yeah, I think, you know, I see this in my students too, that they really do have a pretty sharp understanding of what's public and what's private. And they're very good. They're very conscientious, much more than, you know, a lot of older people, frankly, at having security settings set up, at having profiles be locked or private, or you have to request to see it or something like that. And I think that helps too, and that's an area that that younger student athletes are much more comfortable with.
All right, well, guys, I'm not sure if at any point social media is going to make your jobs obsolete, but for now, your expertise has been very helpful to me. Thank you, Brian and Mark and Tyler, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You got it.